we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are going to be mopping up a plate of old cold gravy with a piece of bread because we are desperate for something. Because we are watching tonight's episode of The Star Loss called Farthing's Comet. And it's the kind of episode that, frankly, I didn't even bother to summarize, so I'm just going to wing it here, folks. The ship, it's got problems. There's noises and things are banging and all our insipid trio are all like, whoa, what's happening? There's noises and things are banging.
Are we under attack?
Oh, I don't know. Do I even understand the concept of under attack? So they go check the computer and the computer says, I can't tell you if you're under attack because like that's a security thing, but I can tell you who you can go talk to if you wanted to go talk to. There's the commander security dude. You could talk to him or you could talk to the chief astronomer. And they say, well, we'd like this, the commander security dude. And they say, he's busy. So they talk to the astronomer instead, because that's the obvious second choice.
Well, since there are only two.
And it turns out that he has maneuvered the arc into the path of a comet so that he can look at it. But unfortunately, they're all going to die because of this. And the insipid trio don't want to die, but the scientists there, that would be Farthing and McBride, his not bride, but his assistant, they're resigned to their fate, but they all right, fine, you guys can try if you really want to. And so Devon and Garth and the girl creature take the ship out.
Drip,
there we go. Take out the little fly ship thing that just happens to be handy there and repair the thing on the thrusters, on the reactors, and then they get out of the way of the comet, and life is good again.
Woohoo!
Yeah. I gotta say, this episode, I think it might be the worst I've seen of Star Lost.
Tough call.
So what were you thinking on this episode?
This episode pissed me off all so many ways.
That too.
It really annoyed me.
Is it the scientific detachment?
Well,
is it sort of?
It there was so many things that were wrong with this episode. I should point out that, quite a few years ago, USA Network, for whatever reason, decided that they were going to recycle some of these Star Lost episodes. So what they did is they started kind of pairing them up.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. This is one of the movies, yeah.
This made up one of the movies. And this was the finale, the final of the movies. And they were kind of implying, and I'm going to address this a little bit later.
I think I know what they implied.
They kind of solved everything.
What, by getting the reactors working so that they can now steer the ship?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I understand how that might be the impression you got when you walked away from this episode.
Right.
Oh, I really don't even know where to begin. I really the acting was of a new level of abysmal from Edward Andrews, who has been, you would know him if you see him.
Oh yeah, he was instantly recognizable.
Wasn't he the Maytag repairman before Gordon Jump?
He might have been.
He did something like that. He had some long series.
I think he was one of those. I mean, I wouldn't call him a character actor, but he was one of those working actors.
Yeah,
that did just a boatload of stuff in the 60s and 70s. I mean, he was just on everything.
Anyway, he is a scientist named Farthing, who from now on I shall call Farting, and this episode, Farting's Comet. He surprised when the insipid trio show up. What are you doing here? Well, I'm busy. Go away. But we're dying and stuff. Well, yeah, I know you are. But nothing you can do about it, so go away. And you're too stupid anyway. I loved how he repeated that basically, line for line. I keep forgetting how dumb you are.
How you just don't know science.
How does he know that?
I know. That was quite an assumption. Their clothes, maybe.
It's like they show up, and you guys are obviously too stupid for words, so I'm not going to bother trying to explain anything to your pitiful little brains, which, I mean, is a very shrewd assessment on his part.
I know, but notice how when he finally started talking to the drip that he became just really friendly. He says, come here, my dear. Look in this.
He's humoring a child.
Yeah.
He's humoring a child, I think he was. So, yeah. This guy, first off, let's do the same thing we do in half the episodes of Star Lost. Where the hell did this guy come from?
Yeah, that was one of my big questions. I was fascinated that
500 years after the accident, and
what I liked is that the sphere projector actually had a current roster of all the people that are still, I guess you would call, staff.
And the fact that there's like a security chief who exists, but he's engaged at the moment.
Now, let me take a stop here, because this is one of those things that you and I have just really complained about, how every time an episode ends, it's just one enormous reset.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right back to basically where we started, except the only difference is our trio is now someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in the Return of Oro?
Nothing.
Didn't Devin gain rank?
Yeah, but that's never happened yet. Now, I will say this. I'm not defending that ridiculous setup that didn't go anywhere. But I think this episode was much earlier in the run. And perhaps they held it back because it's a better episode or something. Sorry. Sorry, I thought I could say that with a straight face, but I couldn't. Because this is the episode where they put on the silver jumpsuits. Where that,
and,
which
and
they
you
had
see
in
them
the,
wearing them at the very end of the episode, and then you see them wearing them later
in the episode with the hideous art gallery.
Yeah.
So a little bit of continuity there.
Yeah. Well, didn't we kind of?
I used the word continuity. I cracked me up.
Yeah, continuity, Star Lost, contradiction. didn't we kind of already come to some kind of conclusion, or didn't we read somewhere that these episodes were at least being distributed out of order or something?
Probably. I think we did. I think at the time when they were in the funny outfits, we certainly asked where they got them from, because they had them for like the one episode, and then they were back in their farmhand gear at the in the next. So
yeah.
I can't believe somebody bothered to try two episodes in the same clothes. That seems so aspirational for a show like this that I have trouble believing it's anything other than perhaps they were, I think more likely they were filming an episode and they put they took their costumes off at the end of the day and their trailer burned down.
Mm.
And they said, oh, that was the only set of costumes we had. Make them something new. And they had some plastic lying around. I can't believe it's intentional.
Yeah. Well, and then back to the whole idea that there would still be this kind of crew that is functioning, how you have a director of security, how you'd have a chief astronomer. The concepts there just seem totally ludicrous.
Given the premise of the series.
Yeah, exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Given the premise of this show, this is highly unlikely. Especially if the Ark is still supposed to be on this collision of a Class G solar star. I'm sorry. That just
they were chasing the comet, which is heading towards the star.
Sorry?
They were chasing the comet, which was heading towards the star.
I'm making that up. I want to say on this. But I'm going to wait.
You know what bothers me more than the fact that there's a security – I forget whether it's security chief or what his title was. But
they said director of security.
Something like that, yeah. or the fact that they had a chief astronomer, that they would have these positions and that –
it'd still be filled all these years later.
Or the same guy. I don't know. But either way.
Who hired him?
Yeah.
Who put him in that job? Where did he get his training?
But here's the part that bothers me more than anything else. I mean, it really does. He says, can you call the chief astronomer? And he says, no, I can't. And he says, well,
he's busy.
How do I get there? And he says, here's the map. And so they follow the map to the rear section. Or the chief astronomer is, or they could have said, hey, where's the backup bridge? And then it could have said, well, here you go. Here's the map. Maybe they could have done that, oh, I don't know, 14 episodes ago.
Well, I think they did try something like that at one time, but the computer kind of evaded the question.
Oh, that's a security issue.
Yeah. So I wouldn't tell them.
Oh, yeah.
Nice cop out.
That was just like, I cannot believe you are going to do that and try to maintain credibility with the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
No cop
out. I said credibility with the audience. Like, I know. I'm just on fire tonight with the backups. I don't know. So,
and the other thing that kind of bothered me, you know, to move a little bit ahead, you know, there were just even story ideas and dialogue that I found to be just unbelievably insulting. When Devin sits down in front of the sphere projector and asks what's going on, what does the projector tell him? It says, the Ark is under attack. It doesn't tell him from what, because the projector did not have that information. What happens when they go inside the astronomy module? They said, who's attacking us? And Dr. Farthing's like, attack? Boy, you really don't know what the heck's going on. Attack. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to take their side for a moment here. A computer told them they were under attack. I mean, there was just some kind of just unbelievable arrogance on Dr. Farthing's part.
Well,
yeah, and in doing so, also sort of confirming the stupidity of this assumption that the Ark was under attack. I mean, they had no reason to think otherwise.
This was an incredibly insulting episode to scientists. I mean, we've talked about this before where scientists are not necessarily portrayed in a very good light, but Farthing and McBride are just
like idiots.
Wow. They are so, I want to say detached, but that's not exactly right. They're dismissive beyond detachment. It's almost aggressive dismissiveness. You know, it seems like positive.
And I'm not sure who's worse. They're both pretty bad at times.
They're both pretty bad. Yeah. Totally unsympathetic. Although, you know, later on, it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of getting to like those wacky three kids. That was pretty bad.
Pretty
too.
That was about right.
Pretty much word for word too. I think.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it turns out they they have astronomy reactors.
Yeah.
Which.
Who knew?
I'm not sure I understand.
Astronomy? Well.
So the captain's up there on the bridge flying the ship. Let's say things have not gone to hell in a handbasket. The captain's up there flying on the bridge and he's using the reactors to fly the ship. And the Astronomer Royale back there is using his own set of reactors to steer the ship too.
Steer the ship in the way wherever he wants to look at. That's hardly productive.
And could not anybody anyway through these 14 episodes that we have watched so far, the 13 previous episodes said, oh, yeah, the reactors are busted, but we got a spare set of astronomy reactors where they're fine.
If anybody should have known this, okay, it would have been those kids that we met many, many moons ago.
Yes. Yes.
Those kids.
And they should have known how to call the director of security or...
Yeah, they should have been able to... I mean, it's like, you know, I would have been on the line in a second to grab them and say, hey, kids, guess what we found?
Reactors!
We found auxiliary reactors. We can actually steer the ship.
So let me ask you this question, now that you've brought the kids up. What were they doing during this crisis?
That's a good question. They're probably still running computer simulations.
Lots of other things could have been going on, like problems in a dome or stuff, and they wouldn't have gotten involved. But I mean, the ship is actually being pummeled to destruction, and domes are being blown up. And nah, we can't. Devin and Rachel and Garth will take care of that. Probably, I hope. I'm counting on them.
Well, and again, this is something that you and I have really railed against. Episode after episode, how there is this stupid reset button and how at the end of every story, They seem to forget everything that had just transpired. The only thing that's different is where they're now located.
Mm-hmm.
But their knowledge, whatever happened, it's gone. They don't remember anything.
I know.
And I can't imagine. I mean, if this really was the idea of Harlan to have this kind of thing happen, I mean, then I'm dismayed that Harlan would write an idea that stupid to have your primary protagonists, essentially they're supposed to be your show's heroes, and they can't remember anything that happened from one episode to the next. No direct sense of continuity in this series at all. And granted, maybe it is supposed to be an anthology series, but you should have something that's kind of really, you know, a thread that's tying it all together. And there's not even that.
No.
I mean, it is so badly written.
It is awful. And I can only assume that, you know, Harlan didn't write this script. He didn't write any except that first one. But I can imagine that he did write this script, but that they screwed it up because he wanted three characters and they only gave him two.
You've ruined it. You've killed my child, my baby that I girthed from my loins of the script page by page, and you've gutted it, you heartless bastards. You know.
But he did not write this script. I just want to be careful to say that. It was written.
Oh, no, he didn't write it, but he did write the series Bible, didn't he?
Yeah, but I've seen the Bible, and I don't think it says anything about there's an amnesia drug in the corridors.
Retcon.
Oh, there you go. That's what it is. There's amnesia drug in the corridors. So people will leave their domes, and then when they go back, they forget that they aren't on a thing. Which, of course, the domes are getting cracked up, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because of this thing. All the loss debris, of life. But, I mean, let's face it, there's not much debris we can do anyway.
No.
Actually, upon reflection, this episode, the threat of not being able to steer is because Farthing has, quote, worked for years to get them onto this course, according to what he said, or years of his work to get them to this position so that he could do this. Does that mean he's the guy that got them
on the collision course to the star? That's what I want to know.
And then further, now that they're out of the course of the comet, are they back on the course to the solar star, or are they off the course of the solar star?
Yeah, that was exactly going to be my question. I mean, what happened? Did Farthing rescue them, and did our trio put them back on a course of doom, or vice versa? I don't know.
And there's no reference to the star collision in this episode.
None. No, in fact, the only impending doom is from the comet debris.
Mm-hmm. Which, of course, the scientists have calculated, and, well, we're going to die, so
it's
not much
be
point.
It's going to be really fast, and you're not going to know it.
Yeah, so don't worry about it. It's not – I don't want to lie. I'd die either, but, yeah, what can you do?
Well, and that's the other thing, you know, that really bothered me about Farthing. I mean, he's supposed to be this scientist. Okay, fine. Usually when a scientist is in the pursuit of some sort of research, it is in an attempt to make some sort of a study – for posterity and for history. And if he's going to be doing this just on a lark with the full knowledge that, you know, I'm going to blow myself to smithereens along with everybody else in this arc, but, oh, I'm going to learn so much. Really?
But you see, that's that whole thing about that cliche about scientists being these mad, irresponsible creatures who never pay any attention to what the implications of their work might be.
And
I hate that, but that's exactly
it. I agree.
This is taken to a degree that's so ridiculous. This is down to the whole thing, like when I'm complaining in Doctor Who, when the Time Lords want to destroy all of time, or the Daleks want to destroy all of reality. It's like, this plan does not really make a lot of sense. And I'm going to steer the arc into a destruct path so I can look at a comet because
no one else
has
done it before.
Gosh, that's cool. Is not believable.
No, it isn't. And that's my whole point. I mean, and you were right when you said earlier how this paints science and scientists in a very, very poor light. It does. I mean, this was insulting in terms of what science is really supposed to be all about. And this concept that Farthing is willing to just, you know, throw everybody's lives away purely for the sake of intellectual ego.
And the McBride is willing to go along with it. And she goes along with it. And she doesn't seem to care.
Well, except that she wants to spend her last few remaining minutes with her family.
Yeah, but what I mean is she doesn't seem to care about Farthing's quest.
No.
So it's like she seems to be complicit accomplice in him doing something that he's doing because he's a nut job, and she's doing it why? Because he won't let me have the day off otherwise, and I can't go see my family. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But that reminds me of something that we asked the question. I'm going to ask the question again. How old is Farthing? Is Farthing been here since the ship took off 800 years ago?
Well, everybody on that ship is supposed to be human except for Oro, who's probably still roaming.
Okay. So,
but aside from him, everybody's supposed to be human. So
there's one other thing that we failed to mention. McBride designed the spacesuits.
Yeah.
That they're using on the Ark.
Uh-huh. And yeah, I'd be inclined to think that
I was on the design team. It's like,
really? So you were there when they designed them
800 years ago.
The ship?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it wasn't a very good design.
I was going to say, I have down here, worst spacesuit design ever.
Yeah.
There was actually one thing I liked about it, though. Okay? I don't know how practical it is, but I like the idea that they can cause the umbilical cord to go rigid so that the spaceship can maneuver the spacewalker into position.
Yeah.
I thought that was... perhaps a bit Freudian, but by and large, it was something I've not seen anywhere else in science fiction. So they actually had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of it was kind of, yeah. So anyway, apparently McBride helped Farthing maneuver the Ark into this path. And then the engine control unit, which conveniently is on the outside of the spaceship, burned out, and then, well, I guess we're going to die.
Oh,
so sad. Going to die one of these days. And, yeah.
Well, maybe it's a mercy killing.
It would have been a mercy killing. I was rooting for the comet. I really was. I was watching this episode going,
please.
Just one big strike, end it all.
Put me out of my misery.
But I tell you, they really spent the big bucks because McBride's outfit has got the coolest replica of the Star Lost. I've seen it. It was so realistic. It looked like the real thing.
It might have been the model. I mean, it could have been a model, you know, that Douglas Trumbull made.
It is.
Yeah, of course it was.
which I don't know why it was in her office, but
hey, yeah.
What the
heck? What was the point? Except maybe to monitor strike hits. But boy, that was convenient to have that right there when she needed it.
Anyway, so this control unit has burned out. And Devon is like, well, why can't we fix it? And McBride's like, what's the point?
But we're all going to die.
We're going to die anyway. I mean, you don't have enough time to do it. And it's like, it takes three people. There's five people standing in the room. They're going, it takes three people. And then so they get those three and they go out on the spaceship that's conveniently prepared. And McBride rigs up like a replacement or sounds like she's supposed to be rigging up a replacement, but in fact, all she does is give him instructions on how to rewire the existing one. But okay, doesn't really matter.
No.
But then there's this whole back and forth going on
between McBride, her and Farthing.
Farthing. I mean, two things to begin
really?
With. There's at first when they start to go out, they do this whole kind of I don't know why you bothered to get along, let them go out there. I mean, it's such a futile effort. And he says, I only let them go because I got tired of arguing with them.
And that's when he finally says, besides, I think I'm kind of liking those kids.
I kind of like those kids. Well, that may have been a little later. I don't remember. But he just denigrates McBride. Like, well, you know, it's like, not that you could.
Are you sure it'll work?
Think you can do this? Can you do this stuff? And she's like, yeah, I'm an engineer. I can do this stuff. And
you didn't answer my question.
Yeah. And then she runs away. Because apparently the episode was running a little short and they needed to come up with a little extra tension in Devon rewiring four wires, which is all he had to do.
That's all we saw.
It didn't it feel like we saw every minute of his spacewalk to you? Because it did to me.
No, it felt a lot worse, but.
I think his spacewalk was running in double time. And, or double half time. Or half double time. Or you know.
Half time.
Half time. Yeah, quarter time. Quarter flash. It was not a flash. It was a long time. Anyway, she runs off to be with her family, and they get on the mics and like, oh, we're all going to die. Please. I don't want to die. Help me. Don't you want to do this? Blah, blah, blah. And she goes, okay. So she comes back. And they seem to be, she and Farthing seem to be on the same page. And then suddenly they're at it. Now is the time this old.
Now we're going to have a spat.
Now we're going to have a spat. Now is the moment you've decided that you're going to start being snarky at one another.
We're going to air our grievances right here, right now, as we face impending doom.
And giving these ridiculous instructions. I mean, for what they're doing for Devon and Garth. I mean, Garth, don't move. Don't take your eyes off of anything. Or, you know, don't look away. Don't look at Devon. Don't do anything. Just keep your eyes on it. All he's doing is holding a joystick.
Well, no, it was Rachel who's supposed to keep her eyes on Devon all the time.
Rachel's supposed to keep her eyes on Devon. Garth is not supposed to look at Devon.
No. Well, yeah.
No, they said that.
They did?
Yes. Do not look at Devon.
Oh,
let
that's right.
Rachel
don't,
be
yours. Yeah, right.
You keep your eyes on the panel. So he's basically holding the stick, not looking at the panel. He's looking around at Devon and whatnot because the director was apparently an idiot. Rachel is supposed to, you know, don't even blink because if you blink,
you could lose him.
Yeah. How is that going to happen? His cord could get tangled if you blink. Sorry. And if
blink.
It did, what's she going to do about it?
I don't know. Turn to stone. I have no idea.
It was pretty.
It was ridiculous, although watching her with that frozen face was more than I could bear.
She is one of the more, she seemed very concerned for Devon, the guy out there. Because I really felt her emoting. No, I didn't.
No, I didn't. Not really. No.
Glaciers emote more.
Yeah.
So, and then also Farthing's calculations are off by 27 minutes. That was another piece of Jeopardy that didn't really make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, he told them when they went out, you have X amount of time. And then, about 37 minutes from that point, he says, whoops, I made a calculation error. You have 27 less minutes. You only got 10 minutes out there.
And what are you going to tell them? Oh, when it's over.
Yeah, when they're dead. Yeah. Why bother? I'm not going to tell them. But I really don't understand what the point of to the story was, except to give McBride another chance to kind of take a dig at him.
Well, it was to add a greater sense of jeopardy, but at the same time, it really served no purpose because our trio know nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And then I have to wonder, did he reset the clock? He must have. He must have reset the clock to more accurately show how much time was left. Wouldn't you think that one of them would have said, hey, what happened to 27 minutes? They're mysteriously gone.
Our time is all missing. And they have to do these. It's like it's what I mean. It's like they have McBride leave in the middle of a moment when there's no way on earth she should have gotten up and run out. And so they kill some time getting her back. Then they have to get Devon out to the thing, and we have the comet debris because the ship only has shields in front, and a little bit of comet debris hits and nearly kills them, and that takes a little more time. And then we have them get into a fight, and that wastes a little bit of time. And then we have the calculation wrong, and they have even less time. It really felt to me like the director was filming this episode, and he's going like, wow, they've still got 37 minutes according to my calculations, and we need to speed this up a little. Let's, I know, write it so Farting doesn't have made a mistake, and there's 27
minutes.
Yeah,
they were right. They were padding the script.
They were padding the script as they were filming it.
As we're filming it.
Yeah. So we gotta get that thing. And then of course the airlock fails on the spacecraft.
God, the airlock issue. Now that's another one that just totally irritated me.
Like the part where Rachel pushes the two buttons, the airlock doesn't work, she tells everybody, and then she swaps place with Garth and says, Garth, you try it.
I'll see if I can fix it. Push, 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 push. Nope, push, it's push. Broken.
Nope.
But here's the thing that really bothered me. It turns out that apparently the hatch was closed, so that umbilical cord that was keeping Garth or not, keeping Devin attached to the ship, so to speak. What was it attached to? Did it all of a sudden become severed when the hatch door shut?
Was the outer hatch door shut?
Yes, it was.
I couldn't figure out what was stuck. I couldn't figure out what she was trying to do.
And I think at some point it became clear that the door was stuck or the door would not open.
But they said the seal had gone bad.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you do when you close the door and it doesn't work?
Yeah. And I kept thinking, you know, if this is a problem, Devin, there's nothing to stop you from actually going inside the hatch and just hold on to something.
Yeah.
While the shuttle makes its way back into the dock.
Maybe you could even pull the door closed yourself. It didn't help much.
Which makes for the jeopardy completely meaningless.
So it looked like Devin was going to have to kill himself so that dripping long hair could survive, but then he doesn't. So
darn.
They just push him into the airlock, into the landing bay in front of them, and then he disconnects from the umbilical cord, which in this case means sliding your backpack off.
Yeah, which means, okay, so there goes any last bit of air you might have, except for what's in your very poor excuse of a helmet.
Well, I think the helmet air was being held in much the same way it does in a diving bell, because it was obviously open around the bottom. So it must have been that the air was trying to rise up and keeping him safe that way.
That's how it works.
And since there were no cords from his backpack to his helmet, when he slipped it off, it was just strapped on. Air must have been coming from somewhere else. Maybe it was a rebreather.
Well, you know, since the science in so many other aspects of the show is so bad, you know, what you just proposed here makes perfect sense.
And I also like the part where when we're all down to the whole, like, I've got no air, I'm going to die, McBride comes up with, oh, by the way, there's more air in there than you think because I designed a safety margin into it.
Oh, really? When?
When she designed it 800 years
ago. 800 years ago?
I'm glad I did that because I was thinking at the time that we might do something stupid with our astronomy section and we'd need a little extra air. So they make it. Unfortunately, they get back in just in time. They move the thing out of the line of the asteroids. Although, am I right in my interpretation that what we were originally told was that they had flown into the path of the comet,
mm-hmm.
and that they were kind of in line with it?
They were in its tail.
They were in its tail, and there was kind of an eye of the storm where everything was coming straight at them, but that it was going to get much worse when they moved out of the eye of the storm, because then they were going to be destroyed.
Right.
And
now they moved out of the eye of the storm.
And so then they've steered the ship out of the eye of the storm, and there wasn't even
a bump.
A bump. There wasn't even a, oh, we have to still pass out of the comet tail or anything like that.
Well, I think the implication was, and they don't really say anything, but it's sort of suggested based on this really cheesy picture that you keep looking at every time Farthing looks inside that little viewer. And I think what they were implying is that the arc was actually gaining on the comet.
Could be.
And it was about to collide with the nucleus.
It could be. I don't think they understood comets very well, but...
No, but I think that's what they were hinting at.
Spaceships.
I mean, again, when I watched that, I thought, okay, well, you know, here again, the science is just real crap.
Verbs. Any of those things.
But no, but that, I kind of think that's what they were suggesting was going to happen.
But I think this episode had one distinction. If it's not the worst episode of The Star Lost, which, as you rightly point out, is arguable, there are other genuinely...
John, I don't know. It's tough.
This one really has, in my opinion, beyond the worst ending ever.
Yeah, there was no ending.
That's right. They walk back into the astronomy lab, having now repaired the engine, and we get the credits. I think we look in the viewer, and it's like we're not in the comet anymore. And we roll the credits. And there is so much left unanswered here that you should be asking about
Like, okay, are we on course? Are we not on course? Can we steer the ship? Can we not steer the ship?
Can we steer it out of the path of the stupid star?
Can we do something now that we
couldn't
do before?
Do you have the private number of the director of security? Can you get the computer to tell us where the backup bridge is so that we can call the kids to go fly this thing? I mean, there's all that, all those questions that by ending it without them even leaving, we just don't get. I mean, would they leave? I mean, yeah, admit. Where's McBride's family?
That was never asked or never answered. We have no idea. We can only assume not too far because she was sprinting to go spend her last few remaining minutes with them.
Instead of using a jump tube. They probably didn't have the money for that effect this week because it's so expensive. It was really a dreadful.
No, it was pretty poor.
What have you got? Because I think...
I really don't have much left. I mean, you pretty much covered every single aspect of it that I did. I mean, there are just some little things like, okay, here's something that really kind of floored me. Again, this kind of points again to the stupidity that they're portraying the scientists in. I mean, there's when they're asking about can they fix this control panel outside, and McBride says it's impossible. It can't be done. No way. No, it can't be done. And Garth actually comes up with a potentially simple solution. Well, can't you bypass it?
Yeah.
And she's like, and the only thing that she's like, well, you know, aside from putting you, you know, aside from the risk of being blown to smithereens by the ship's reactors, I mean, hang on.
We're going to be blown up. Yeah. They seem to be worried about people getting killed before they
all killed. I know.
Yeah. Their only compassion was for, well, you can't do that because you die.
You're going to die. We're going to kill you. It's like, you know, hey, we'll take that chance.
You might as well go with a ship with the rest of us.
I mean, we're all going to go down with a ship. What's wrong with you? Why do you want to live? You know, but the fact that Garth actually came up with an idea.
The fact that Garth can fly a spaceship.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the fact that they understand any kind of technology at this point, I mean, that's kind of amazing.
The fact that Rachel can actually operate a cord. That one is really up on my list of amazing things. Because, yeah. I know she was supposed to be like a young woman who had lots of potential and really was a capable and intelligent human being, but because of the moors of the Cypress Corners and their place for women or whatnot, she'd had no potential, and it wasn't until she moved outside into the outer arc with Devon that she began to explore the potential as a human being. But we've not seen any of that.
No.
No.
I mean, the only thing that I came up with, you know, as I was watching this, I mean, you'd suggested the idea that maybe this was filmed much earlier than the return of Oro. I mean, I don't know, but if I'm going to assume for a second that this show, this episode is placed in production order, I mean, this, if anybody intelligent were running this show, it would have been a great opportunity to completely take the series in a new direction. You've got the ship more or less fixed. I mean, at least you've got it set on a different course now so that it's not going to blow itself up. Hey, now we have a new threat. We got Oro, who wants to take the ship back to Zar. I mean, there's so many other really, really great stories that they could have gone with this. But again, by the virtue of the almighty reset button and the almighty retcon that everybody seems to take at the end of every story, it's like, why did you even present us with this storyline? What was the whole point of it? Was there a point? I mean, why? Why does this episode even exist?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it doesn't...
I mean, the more I think about it, the more it gives me a headache.
It is bad. I mean, I feel like the return of Oro feels more like the season.
It feels like that should have been the season finale.
To give you a chance to have something next year that's different. And, you know, get you to go, woo-hoo, let's get that show renewed.
Maybe that was the intent. Who knows? But this story alone, I mean, as we pointed out, our trio have absolutely – I mean, there's no discussion whatsoever except for the opening prologue, which we have in every story, that the Ark is on this collision course with the Class G solar star. I'm sorry. That – it just grates on me every time.
Well,
and but not
at
this
least
time.
They're consistent.
Oh yeah, but not well. Not consistent. Not now. Now the threat is a comet. I mean, the solar. You know, the solar. Why can't it be a lunar star? Why can't it be a planetary star? Why can't it be an asteroid star?
How about just a star?
Just call it a star. But the fact that they don't even talk about this collision with a star. I mean, it's out of the picture. Now it's, oh, we're all going to die because of this comet. Thank you very much, Dr. Farthing.
Mm-hmm.
And what does this mean now? Now that they've changed trajectory of the arc. Yeah, that's the big question that I kept having. Were we on course, on collision course? Are we not on collision course? I don't know. And I don't think the people who were running the show knew.
No.
I don't think they cared.
Quite likely. Quite likely they didn't care.
I mean, each episode is abysmal in its own unique way. And in terms of any kind of scientific, and I really have to put my tongue in my cheek when I say that, any kind of scientific merit, I mean, this is right at the bottom. I mean, this is really pitifully bad.
Well, if we're lucky, then there are but two more episodes of The Star Lost for us to review. And if we're lucky, they won't be as bad as this one.
How come I just can't see that coming, especially knowing what the next episode is. I'm sorry.
I forgot what its name is, but it's something like the Beehive.
The Beehive, yes. That should be enough, dear listeners. You were warned.
You've been warned. So when we come back for another episode of Star Lost, it will be the Beehive or whatever it's actually called. But I think there are bees.
I think.
Because I don't think that the writers would be subtle enough to be a beehive, to be some sort of human hive of activity that they're comparing to a busy beehive. But more likely has to do with...
No, I'm sure it's some evil Dr. Frankenstein kind of character who's created mutated bees.
Well...
And I'm just saying that as a guess because I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either. I've never seen it, but I'm really looking forward to it as I'm sure you are, right?
No, oh man, I can hardly wait.
And I'm sure our listeners are just eagerly waiting to watch that so that they can hear us talk about it after the fact. Well, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you for the torture. All I can say is that
my pleasure.
This TV series has replaced Bran muffins. Because all I have to do is watch it and then sit on the toilet and go, ah!
Well, be careful about that. You don't want to blow a gasket or pop an aneurysm there.
No.
All right. Well, listeners, we hope you'll join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
End of line.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolfe.